Movies are an enormously popular form of entertainment, but Nick Clooney, the former host of American Movie Classics, says some movies offer more. In 1977, George Lucas changed the popular culture with a movie that took place long ago in a galaxy far, far away. 50 years before, another landmark work scored a technological breakthrough. The Jazz Singer was the first talkie.
Blue sky, smiling at me, 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 me. Nothing but little blue sign. Do I see? Do, 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 do.
In his new book, The Movies That Changed Us, Nick Clooney picks the 20 most powerful movies of the last 80 years.
So bloody hard to get it down to 20, Bob. It was, I started with just under 400 titles. Research, as you know, takes you places you do not want to go and absolutely rattles all of your preconceptions.
Okay, I guess we're asking the basic question, why, for each of these. Morocco? I don't know Morocco. 1930.
This is a movie that really introduced us to Marlene Dietrich. And within 15 minutes of the film, we see her coming out in a man's tuxedo with a top hat, and she's singing. And every man in the room, this is a cafe, obviously gravitates toward her immediately. Well, she looks around, she looks at the Gary Cooper character, and she looks at the Adolphe Monjou character, and she walks past them all and walks to the prettiest woman in the cafe and leans over and kisses her on the mouth. This is a opening shot, I believe, for the 1930s attitude about women in movies. Women during the 1930s were everything. They were pilots. They were doctors. They were also, of course, sex objects and sex kittens. But they were, in addition, non-traditional top moneymakers. Katharine Hepburn, Betty Davis. Most of the great names that we now associate with motion pictures rose in the 30s.
Stagecoach changed the way Westerns were done and kind of brought the Western into respectability.
That's right. By the time the sound had come along in 1927, most Westerns were relegated to the second feature, to the serial. It was a great moneymaker, but nobody took them seriously. They were the throwaway kids. Well, along came John Ford, and John Ford decided that he had this Ernest Haycock story called Stage to Lordsburg, and he said, I think that this can elevate this form to perhaps even a great American form. And that's precisely what he did, and for about a generation, the Western was the American form.
Hello, kid.
Hello, Curly. Didn't expect to see you riding shotgun on this run, Marshal.
Going to Lordsburg? I figured you'd be there by this time.
No, lame horse. Well, it looks like you've got another passenger.
Yeah, I'll take the Winchester.
You may need me in this Winchester, Curly. Saw a ranch house burning last night.
It was John Wayne's big breakthrough.
He knew he was a poverty row actor, and that was going to be the end of his life. Here's John Ford, who liked him, and he had him out on his boat, and he said, now, read this script, and what do you think, and who should play this part? And John Wayne said, well, Lloyd Nolan ought to play it. And John Ford said, damn it, Duke, can't you do it yourself? This is yours. And in fact, it was the absolute seminal moment in John Wayne's life.
Triumph of the Will was Leni Riefenstahl's movie about Hitler and Nazism.
Best propaganda film ever made. Have you seen it?
I've seen scenes, not the whole thing start to finish. It's very dramatic looking. Just the look of the movie is striking.
Bob, it seems to start slowly, but it isn't slow. It's sucking you in. It starts with an airplane in the clouds, and it seems to be there for 5 minutes, not doing anything except slowly circling and descending slower and slower, until it gets to Nuremberg and out steps Adolf Hitler. It is chilling. And if it is chilling now, after all this time, imagine what it must have been to those who are watching it in Paris and in Belgium and in Czechoslovakia and London.
Dr. Strangelove taught us we could laugh about the Cold War, or at least do a satire of it for the first time.
For the life of our nation. Now, truth is not always a pleasant thing. But it is necessary now to make a choice, to choose between two admittedly regrettable, but nevertheless distinguishable post-war environments. One where you got 20 million people killed, and the other where you got 150 million people killed.
You're talking about mass murder, General, not war.
I'm not saying we wouldn't get our hair mussed, but I do say no more than 10 to 20 million killed, top, depending on the break.
I will not go down in history as the greatest mass murderer since Adolf Hitler.
Perhaps it might be better, Mr. President, if you were more concerned with the American people than with your image in a history book.
As you know, Bob, what they say about satire, satire is what closes on Saturday night, you know. But this satire worked, and it worked because of the, I think, the commitment of Mr. Kubrick and also of the cast. It's just a gem.
The Graduate, as felt by some, might have killed the love story.
Isn't that amazing? And I hadn't thought of that until I saw, read a critic's review of the play.
Benjamin, I want you to know that I'm available to you. And if you won't sleep with me this time...
Oh, my Christ.
If you won't sleep with me this time, I want you to know that you can call me up anytime you want and we'll make some kind of an arrangement.
There's a pretty good point that can be made there. I looked over more than 1,000 movies, and I saw that the proportion of those that you could really describe as romantic movies, there was upwards of 30%, even excluding musicals, that could be referred to as romantic movies. Well, along came The Graduate, and after 1967, that number falls to about 11%. Interesting.
Mrs. Robinson, do you think we could say a few words to each other first this time?
I don't think we have much to say to each other.
Look, for months, all we've done is come up here and leap into bed together.
Are you tired of it?
I'm not, no. But do you think we could liven it up with a little conversation for a change?
Well, what do you want to talk about?
Anything. Anything at all.
Do you want to tell me about some of your college experiences?
Oh, my God. Think of another topic.
So art can change people.
It does, doesn't it? And isn't that something that we have to relearn, not only every generation, maybe every year? It affects us in a way that I never really understood myself. I spent 30 years in news, as you know, Bob, and I never really understood how important a reflection and a catalyst pop culture was and could be. I talked to Mr. Cronkite one time. One of the things that he said in that conversation was, here's what I overlooked. He said, I didn't get at all the rock and roll revolution. Doing it all over again, I would sure recognize what that was doing to us and how that was affecting us. And I did that with movies when I was a kid. I just thought they were, hey, that's entertainment. That's not the real thing. That isn't the stuff of life. Well, on occasion, on rare occasion, it can indeed be the stuff of life.
Television host and Cincinnati broadcaster Nick Clooney. His new book is titled The Movies That Changed Us, Reflections on the Screen. A complete list of Clooney's movie picks is at npr.org.